Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 60, and the Steelers are coming off a solid 33-20 win over the Cincinnati Bengals, raising their record to 8-5, dropping the Bengals to 10-3. And Dave, my goodness, it's a win, a bunch of injuries to the Bengals that seem significant, of course, to Andy Dalton, the most significant one. And trash talking the likes we haven't seen in a long time.
Yes, this brings you back to several years ago, you know, between the Steelers and the Ravens, right? I mean, it's got that kind of this rivalry has this kind of feel for it, feel to it now. And you know, you go all the way back to the game, the Week 8 game between these two teams, and then what happened afterwards with Vince Williams, you know, basically saying he was going to paint Vontaze Burfict. You know, he made that mention on Twitter. I think he later deleted that.
Immediately deleted it. I mean, yeah, 10 hours.
And then, you know, the war of words ever since then, you know, about several Steelers players not liking the way Burfict reportedly kind of reacted to tearing up the knee of Le'Veon Bell in that Week 8 game. You know, it's been you had Mike Mitchell making comments before the game. You had, who was it, Marvin Jones making some comments before the game as well, too. And then you had Pac-Man Jones just went full Pac-Man and delivered a nice little expletive-laden video on Instagram prior to the game, basically telling, you know, sending a message to Mike Tomlin that he needs to get his players to, you know, chill out. More colorful words than that. Then fast forward on pregame, you had the skirmish there, which looked like, I don't know what you saw, it looked like Burfict crossed the 50 on into where the Steelers were warming up, and that to kind of have a few words with Vince Williams, and you know, the two teams came together in the middle of the field, and heck, we haven't even started talking about the game yet.
Yeah, and let's just get this. I don't want to say it's nonsense because obviously it matters to the players. So it's not nonsense. I know a lot of people would prefer to do without it. Dave, I don't know the appropriate punishment for Vince Williams' tweet, but at some level what Whitworth said, I generally agree with. Whether it's just a letter admonishing him that that type of behavior is on Twitter, on social media, is unacceptable, or it's a $5,000 fine, I don't think there should have been a significant punishment. But I do think they could have nipped that in the bud, and I said so at the time. So this isn't anything new. Having said that, let's stop with the idea that it was a death threat and that BS, because that's ridiculous. It's colorful language and stupid stuff, and we saw the stupid tweet about a mass murder that one of the Bengals sent before this game. So is it unnecessary? Is it immature? Absolutely. Is it something that people should be taking seriously and having the FBI look into? No, that's ridiculous. So let's make sure we kind of understand the level of stuff. Having said that, what happened on the field? Did Mike Mitchell deserve a penalty? I don't know whether he deserved a penalty. He hit him in the head. So it's difficult to know where a guy's going when he's diving for a football and his head is, you know, a foot and a half above the ground. But the annoying part, again, was Mike Mitchell celebrating as they throw two flags and Eifert holds on to the pass. He certainly didn't target the head from what I could tell, but having a penalty called, I didn't have a problem with. Could the refs have thrown out and maybe contained this whole thing once the game started? Could they have thrown out Antonio Brown and Drake Kirkpatrick? Probably. I mean, they were open hand, but they're slapping each other in the head multiple times. I mean, that's pretty close to throwing a punch in my book. They called the personal fouls. But, you know, from that point on, it's really hard for me to see things the Steelers did versus the multiple, like five different occasions where Burfict did stuff that I thought was egregious and none worse than diving at Ben's lower leg and ankle, to me, that looked like clearly with intent. He wasn't stumbling. He went low. He hit him low, and the refs didn't call it. And I, you know, that to me was unbelievable.
Just about as unbelievable as Michael Bennett's hit to the face mask a couple of weeks ago, right? And that didn't draw a fine. We'll see.
It did draw a penalty though at the time.
Yeah, and look, Burfict's didn't even, the refs looked straight at that thing yesterday, didn't call the penalty there. I would expect Antonio Brown to be fined for this game.
Do you generally agree with my assessment, just in terms of where I came down on most of that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, you get past that first altercation between Brown and Kirkpatrick, and I think it was all Vontaze Burfict for the most part instigating it from there on out. And look, I'm as objective as they come. If I thought, you know, somebody, you know, did something, you know, now look, you could say Antoine Blake's tackle out of bounds was a little rough, but
he got flagged for it. I mean,
and he got flagged for it, rightly so.
And William Gay, rightly so, got flagged for a celebration. Obviously, AJ Green kicking the ball in the stands didn't, and that's kind of a bit stunning that the guy punts it in the crowd, the ref's right there, and they don't throw a flag.
Yeah, and Burfict, I mean, you just go through all through that game, and there's, I mean, even in what, the second or third drive, he gets D'Angelo Williams on the ground, and looks like he kind of tries to grind it into him a little bit, you know? David DeCastro took everything from that point pretty much between the lines, I thought, was the Steelers reacting to what Burfict or one of the other Bengals
did. I'll throw one other penalty in, and correctly, the refs called a crackback block on Antonio Brown. Which, look, if they're penalties, the Antoine Blake thing on the sideline, that's football. It's a physical game. They call the penalty. I don't have a problem with that stuff. The guy gets to, was it Reggie Nelson? The guy gets to come up and rip his face mask for 15 yards and push him over a pile, and there's no corresponding penalty? That's the stuff I don't understand.
Yeah, they could have. And should they have thrown Dre Kirkpatrick and Antonio Brown out early? No, absolutely not. But some precedent should have been set from that point forward, saying, you know, for the least littlest thing, we're gonna flag you for 15 yards. You know, I think if you go and you kind of like in baseball when you throw at a player or throw behind a player, right? Both benches are worn. And who knows? Maybe there was some sort of warning at some point. But there were instances during that game where Vontaze Burfict probably should have been flagged. He was, you know. Look, even I just posted a GIF on Twitter from less than 5 minutes to go. The Steelers were driving deep, and Burfict, you know, after the whistle clearly blows, he blows Roosevelt Nix up over the pile.
And DeCastro, you know? DeCastro went after him.
Right, and Burfict was flagged on that play. You know, it gets where the flag sometimes isn't enough in a lopsided game.
Well, for sure, and that's when you hope, you know, terrible things don't happen. And fortunately, in the gist of it, in the bigger picture, not, you know, terrible things didn't happen. But boy, it sets up.
Let me ask you before we go any further. I know you've had this guy on before. Lance McAllister covers the Bengals. Who does he cover him for now?
He does some pregame work in WLIW, I think 700. He's got a talk show, and as I'm sure you all saw, he was posting tweets from Steeler fans and Bengal fans that were, you know, pretty comical.
Yeah, but I mean, he really is taking really. I saw one of his blog posts Sunday night. Really looked to be calling the Steelers dirty, saying the Rooney family should be embarrassed.
Yeah, there was one tweet that was way over the top. The rest of it I didn't really see. But, yeah, said the Rooney family should apologize for their team and be embarrassed how they played, I think was the gist of it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, a little bit over the top there. I mean, he's always been accused of being a homer as far as I can remember.
Yeah, I'll just say I have not ever gotten that impression before, so that's just my
I have. So, you know, that definitely caught my eye last night. I mean, look, Steelers were the most penalized team in the game anyway, right?
Yeah, they came into the least penalized team in the NFL, and they had more penalties than the Bengals in this one.
Right. So, you know, there were questionable calls throughout this thing. Will Vontaze Burfict get fined for multiple fines in this game? And more importantly, will he be fined for going low on Ben?
I think if he's not fined for going low on Ben, I'll be shocked. I mean, the one with Michael Bennett, I think there was a little different scenario. This, two steps, you know, intent, going low, I would be shocked if he didn't get fined.
I will too, but I was shocked that Bennett didn't get fined either, for what it's worth. Steelers penalized 5 times for 82 yards in this game. Bengals 4 times for 27 yards in this game. All right, where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the game. And, Dave, I think my take might be a little different than some people's, maybe not different than yours, is this is a game where the offense again came out like they did the first time against Cincinnati and had just a fantastic opening drive, just as good as it could be. I think they converted 3 for 3 on third downs, did everything right. Ben took a shot on a short third down again down the field, completes a 31-yarder to Marcus Wheaton. That was the big play of the drive. But they, you know, they just everything went perfectly. And they kicked the extra point at 7-0. And I will say from there, honestly, much like the last game, not to the same degree, but from there, the offense, again, had very limited success in this game. And if you look at kind of the points they scored, sure, the team put up 26 points from them, but just had 7 straight from the defense. You could really say 7 more from the interception by Robert Golden, putting them inside the 20. And so it was just field goal drives. And it looked like a very good first half in terms of the total yardage. And they did put up 16 points. So that kind of continues the trend of, you know, being on pace for 30. But not great in the red zone. And they didn't have a great game. The offense didn't win this game. The offense obviously certainly didn't lose this game. But this is a game where the defense was the defense that we've come to see from Pittsburgh when they win games. The bend but don't break defense. They gave up a lot of yards. They did give up a garbage touchdown at the end. But again, they created the turnovers. They got the 3 interceptions. And there's no doubt those 3 interceptions won the game for them. Tua inside the 5, William Gay for a touchdown, and Golden setting up another touchdown. This one I'm going to give to the defense.
I mean, and how many does that make in the red zone this year? 6 or 7?
Yeah, 6 or 7.
My goodness, we talk about you know, bending and not breaking at times. That was a classic example of that, especially early on in that game. I don't know, 2 of 3 on red zone offensively wasn't bad. I think it just felt like they were in the red zone more than they were in that game. That's probably, you know, they had drives that stalled at the 24. They had drives that stalled, another drive that stalled at the 29. They had a drive that stalled at the 27. They had a drive, the one that they didn't convert inside the red zone, stalled at the 13. So maybe that's what you're feeling is crossing over the 40 and not finishing those out with 7s. But, you know, we don't track double red zone failures, right? Would you have liked to have seen them finish at least one more of those drives?
Yeah, finish one more in the first half, and, you know, the game probably has a little bit of a different feel coming out. And obviously, when you score in, you know, 2 plays into the second half or whatever it was, that gives you what you need. And I don't know if the game was completely over at that point, but it certainly felt like it was almost over. The offense wasn't as efficient as it has been, you know, over the past month. And we look at the red zone stuff. So yeah, they did get 2 or 3, but you know, they didn't complete drives. And we talk about garbage touchdowns. The Bengals got one. The Steelers touchdown wasn't necessarily a garbage touchdown, but it is one of the few times this year they've gotten over the past couple of years where they've gotten fantastic starting position. I don't know where that was, the 15 or the 16 that they started that last drive. And I think the difference in the game for the Steelers offensively and you know, trying to find things to be critical about, because, look, this team offensively, we've all said it, has been fantastic. So I thought Ben was as good as ever in the first half. Again, maybe a drop or two that didn't help him. Martavis Bryant, again, he's got to catch some of these balls. They're not easy catches, but there are 4 balls in the end zone in the last 3 games that were possible to catch that he hasn't come up with. And then in the second half, for the first time, Dave, and this would be the one thing that would concern me a bit going forward, is we really saw another team get consistent pressure on Ben and him spend a lot of time having to look at the line of scrimmage to see where the pressure was coming from, which means his eyes can't be downfield. And we saw the rhythm that he's been able to throw on consistently for the last five games get broken more than we have at any time in the last since he's been back from injury.
Yeah, and they're normally not a team, at least in that last game, they didn't send in numbers. Remember us going over that, talking about that either on your show or
yeah.
or on the podcast last week. I think they kind of were forced into that later in the game. We'll see exactly as soon as our charting is done how many times they sent more than four guys in this game. And it felt like it was definitely more than what it was back in that Week 8 game. Alejandro Villanueva had his problems in this game. Marcus Gilbert had his problems in this game as well, too. Both times in the first half in particular, I think, I saw both just clubbed off of their base, you know. And I think one time when Villanueva was even after he had help initially, I think Heath Miller started to block. Then released, and then Villanueva is left there to clean it up, and he gets clubbed right off of his base. Luckily, Roethlisberger had already gotten the football out at that time. There was, you would like to see more from this offense, and you hit on Martavis Bryant. We sure are saying almost on a weekly basis, man, if only Martavis is able to hold on to those two other catches, you know, in the game. It's becoming a weekly trend with us. Now, in his defense, that deep ball on what, the second drive?
Second or third
drive, that should have been pass interference. But even so, that ball hit him in the hands.
Yep.
And great players make those catches, in my opinion. It's easy to point to the pass interference on that play. You really would, and you go back to the game in the with the Colts. There is one in the end zone. It does, and people are obviously going to take this the wrong way, David. We're going to get hate mail for this, and I've been accused, David, since day one of being a Martavis Bryant hater. Ever since, even though he was in my first mock draft right after the Senior Bowl. But I mean, the fact of the matter is he needs to start making more plays and plain and simple. And you'd like to say, and if he's able to do that, you would start seeing them finish more, and in particular, that's where that one drive stalled, in the first half there because failing to convert on that third down play. So yes, you would like to see that. Marcus Wheaton really has come alive in the last, three games. What is it? 16? What did I post? 16 catches for 300 and something yards and like a score or two over the course of the last three games. Antonio Brown just absolutely fabulous. I don't know if you saw that post I put up earlier today, David. You remember that it was Antonio Brown's first catch in the game. Remember the third and short, the pass that went from 19 yards down to the 1 yard line by Antonio Brown.
Yeah, a little crossing pass over the middle.
Man, go look and watch what he does to Leon Hall. And he has Leon Hall just flat-footed with that route. I mean, just breaks that thing off 3 yards.
Yep.
Breaks down and then breaks it up. I mean, we talk a lot about how Antonio Brown makes great catches and how he performs after the catch.
Which he did on the sideline later. That was that clearly out of bounds, but that was a great catch.
Yeah, but do we talk enough about how good a route runner Antonio Brown is?
I think we do. I mean, I'm with you on that play. I mean, when you see a guy like that coming out of where he was coming from, just get open into the middle of the field with nobody within 5 yards, you know he just torched somebody off the line of scrimmage.
Absolutely. And what a big play that was. Converts a third down. You get the ball, first and goal at the one. And then, of course, they finish the drive. Boy, D'Angelo Williams, man, you absolutely have to have this guy back next season. No questions asked, right?
And he's under contract, so that's a no-brainer.
Right. I mean, it's going to happen. But for people that thought maybe this was going to be a one-year rental, man, I mean, what an incredible season this guy is having. And, look, I don't want to take anything away from Le'Veon Bell, but how much better of a season would Le'Veon Bell had he stayed healthy? Maybe more catches?
Well, I was talking about this on Twitter last night, Dave, and I hesitate to say anything. Look, I don't think anybody's arguing, and I'm not certainly making the argument that D'Angelo Williams is a better player than Le'Veon Bell. But it would hard for me to imagine that Le'Veon Bell would be much more productive than D'Angelo Williams. Maybe he's a little bit more productive, but when your guy's averaging 4.8, 4.9 yards a carry, which is exactly what Bell was, when he's averaging over 10 yards a catch, which the numbers are better than Bell this year, I just can't see it being more productive. It's just hard to imagine.
Boy, and he has a knack for the red zone. Doesn't it seem like short area?
I do think, and I have found this very interesting, that he's changed his running style to be more like Le'Veon Bell, to be more patient. I mean, I think there are times where he's looking for holes, like he's bouncing around looking for holes, which is very entertaining to watch. I think sometimes maybe even too much, but I mean, he has had unbelievable success kind of doing that and seeing a crease and really getting small through it or diving to it to make sure when there's nothing, he gets a couple.
On that first touchdown of his, go back and look at that thing from the overhead.
Juking whichever back, Malaluga coming over the top.
Right, absolutely. I mean, you have to recognize that, and then you have to have the athletic ability to slide to the left and then you know, get yourself skinny through the hole. It just really has been a great, great season for him, and hoping it, you know, he stays healthy and it continues. Heath Miller, another boy. He likes playing the Bengals, doesn't he?
He's had a big season against the Bengals, that's for sure.
What do you have, another 10 catches? What's that, 20?
Yeah, 20 against the Bengals this year.
20, and he caught all Davis 10 for 10 on the passes that he caught. And boy, a couple of those one way he had to climb the ladder on. And the other one, I think, was a low one he had to dig out from Roethlisberger in the game as well, too. And this is a guy coming off of that, you know, coming off of a rib injury that forced him to miss the game against the Colts. So it keeps getting it done. And yeah, I mean, the only thing that stops his offense, it feels like right now, is penalties, right?
Pretty much, right. I mean, you know, they took one shot deep late in the game that, you know, I think you pointed out Ben was 2 for 5 on deep balls, and we know kind of the two passes that he completed. We can question whether they should take the deep shot there. Like I said, I don't really like to question play calls, so I'm not going to get too bent out of shape out of it. But, you know, it's the whole patience thing the whole game. They're taking the underneath stuff that's there for them. It was another really good play by Reggie Nelson. You want to talk about a free safety who breaks well on the ball and can catch it when it's in the air. He did it. The ball was up there a long time. He made the play. You know, there was some argument that it acts just like a punt. Well, you know, you don't want to be giving away possessions. But basically, the Steelers did what we thought, a lot of possession and a lot of throwing the ball underneath to not checkdowns. I think that they were primary targets of, you know, Heath underneath, Marcus Wheaton, another solid game. And then, you know, obviously AB and D'Angelo Williams in the passing game as well.
Yeah, and you'd like to see, you know, a point per minute possession, right? So, you know, they scored 30, you know, 33, and they had the ball 35 minutes. So, close. You maybe like to see another touchdown instead of a field goal in there would obviously, you know, be the difference there. Let's flip over to the other side of the ball, and this remains. I mean, look, bend don't break, yada yada. You know, all these red zone forced turnovers, everything that goes along with that. How upset are you that Catherine's husband threw for 280 yards?
I'll tell you this, McCarron played a much better game. He was a much better quarterback than I expected him to be for a guy who's not played in the NFL. He throws a good ball. And on the interception, obviously, Will Gay baited him a little bit and knew what to look for, and James Harrison made a huge difference on that play. The dog's a full fan of James Harrison, I know that.
Absolutely.
Toby's in there giving it a little James Harrison roof roof here, here. But Harrison made the play, and McCarron, you know, ended up kind of not being a great decision. And then late in the game, he overthrows Golden with a good hands catch by him and a return where everybody blew up, everybody on the Bengals. You know how defenders love to turn and take shots at guys. Well, they did. I thought he played well. He was 10 for 10 on that last drive. It counts. It's not, you know, wasn't going to win the game for him, but they got to play 3 more games, and he's going to be the quarterback, so that builds confidence. I was impressed. Let's put it that way. I'm not discounting the Bengals because AJ McCarron's the quarterback.
Well, once again, McCarron? Look, if you're going to be a backup in the NFL, you better be able to throw a nice ball, right?
Well, I don't know that the Steelers felt like. Did the Steelers have a guy who could throw a nice ball when the season started?
In their case with him, I was overly impressed with McCarron at Alabama. He's surrounded by a lot of good talent.
You were or were not?
We're not.
No, I was not either, and that's basically my point here. Is I thought the guy throws the ball down the field much better than I expected.
So are we going to be looking, because it's obvious now, we haven't even gotten to the Andy Dalton injury. It's obvious now that McCarron's probably going to start.
He's going to finish the season, I think.
Two games, maybe three, maybe all three of them.
Maybe the rest of the season for him, no matter how far they go. I mean, I just saw Schefter said 4 to 6, best case, maybe six.
Yeah, but I mean, we've got a good feeling that at least he's going to miss the rest of the regular season. We'll see what the specialist says about Dalton. But are we going to look back at this game at the end of the regular season and say, man, look how bad these other three teams, played against, look how good they played against or how bad they made McCarron look. And then look at the Steelers game and say, man, what the heck happened there?
Let me ask it a different way. Would you rather have Matt Hasselbeck, Brock Osweiler, or AJ McCarron right now running your team for the next 3 weeks?
Yeah, that is a good question because I've been paying attention to what Brock Osweiler
can't throw it down the field, right?
He can't throw it down the field. He's completed 4 of 22, I think. 4 of 22 of balls more than 15 yards down the field. And how many did McCarron throw? I forgot to look up that.
He completed at least 3 or 4 to AJ Green, right? I mean, AJ Green had a big day.
And, if you give me Matt Hasselbeck from 10 years ago, but you can't do that. I don't know. McCarron does throw, can hum that thing down the field. But then again, you telegraph a throw like he did on that William Gay pick six.
I mean, there's no question if this is the starting quarterback crew for the AFC, it's Brady and Roethlisberger and then four guys. I mean, it's, I'll put Alex Smith a notch above the other three guys, sure. But that's why last night when I said I think the Steelers and the Pats are the clear favorites in the AFC now, And I'm not discounting Ryan Fitzpatrick and what the Jets are doing. And if they get in, look out for the Jets because I like their defense as well. But if the Steelers do get in, just the quarterback play is so different from the top two teams versus everybody else.
We're going to have to go back and look at McCarron, too, in these final couple of drives, see how much that's just don't give up the home run, too. I mean, how many of those 280 yards were garbage? I mean, obviously that first first couple of deep passes. And look, I told you they're gonna go after Blake. That'd be crazy not to get AJ Green out there on the edge and not go after Blake. But that aside, he made the throws when they counted. Even early on, they kind of went after went to AJ Green against Blake, and then that double move that McCarron connected with AJ Green for the touchdown. That kind of stuff just really shouldn't happen. But what do you think? I mean, are they going to win? Are the Bengals going to win out?
They beat San Francisco. Then the Denver game's a toss up. That's in Cincinnati, right? And then
the Ravens, right?
They probably win the Ravens. I don't think the Steelers win the division. No, I think the Bengals. I think the Bengals win at least one, and I'd bet on two. If they win three, good for them.
How important, boy, it's important for them if they think that they can get Dalton back. How important would a bye be for them now?
Yeah, I mean, they really should, all the chips are on the table here in this game against San Francisco. That's the game. They go win that, and then they're set for the division, right? And then they can focus on Denver, and if they beat Denver, then they're set for a first-round bye. So,
So we might not be able to see how the narrative plays out about Andy Dalton, right?
I know. That's what I say. You know, what? He might not be able to lose a game in the playoffs this year.
What if McCarron wins
yeah,
in
I
the
mean,
first?
There's no scenario where he keeps the job, but it would leave you to say that Dalton has to be healthy to, you know, you wouldn't rush him back if McCarron plays great for three games.
So in other words, you're saying he's not gonna get Tom Brady or Drew Bledsoe or whatever.
Yeah, right. I can't see that happening.
What did you think about Dalton and that thumb injury early? I mean, it really didn't look much like anything on that tackle until you really slowed that thing down.
Yeah, I mean, it's still even hard to see even when you slow it down. Look, you know, Andy Dalton didn't play great in the first game against the Steelers. That was a really bad throw. That was also a great play by Stephon to it. A,
sure was.
Recognize
sure.
it. And then B, reactions and hands. A, reaction time to a ball at his knees. I mean, look, that's a tough catch for a receiver to make. You got a defensive lineman making that catch. That was a really, really good play by Tuitt. And all credit to him because, again, you know, that's a big point swing going on right there.
Absolutely it is. And what do you think about, boy, sometimes Tomlin in these decision-making process sure makes you think he does it because he hears somebody say that he's got to do things the other way. You know, we talked leading up to this game. Well, you know, I think probably early in this game, you know, when they get into nickel, you'll see Ross Cockrell and Brandon Boykin in this game. So what do they do? They roll out a nickel with William Gay, Antoine Blake, and
Cockrell
out there. And it wasn't until, I'll have to go back and double check this, I don't think it was until after the Steelers gave up the long touchdown to A.J. Green that Boykin finally saw the field. And then from that point forward, we saw quite a bit, if not all, of Boykin in the nickel in the slot from that point forward. And I don't know for sure, but I don't think Blake played many, if any, nickel snaps from that point forward. So, you know,
we saw a play or two before that, but I could be wrong. We did see Golden a couple plays in there coming in for Timmons, and so maybe I was getting confused in terms of that. We saw
some dimes.
Yeah, we haven't seen. And by the way, look, I'm not at all opposed to that. The way tight ends have been torching them, if they think that's a better way to go, so be it. I might have got my count wrong, but yeah, to abandon something that works so well and then to leave Blake out there solo on AJ Green and Mitchell coming over late as usual, you know, missing the tackle, the two of them missing the tackle. That, you know, that's just every Steeler fan's nightmare, and it just happens way too often.
Yeah, I mean, you remember Dick LeBeau used to always say that those are two of the things that he always talked about: tackle the catch, don't give up, don't get beat deep, and you go wrong on two of those three on one play. It's bad enough that you're giving up, I think, 34, 36 yard pass in the air past the line of scrimmage, but at that point you have a chance to tackle. You can still save the drive at that point,
and you might get a turnover.
Right, you're getting right. Yeah, they had them right where they wanted them, didn't they?
Yeah, right in the red zone.
Right in the red zone. It's the kind of stuff.
I think the snaps was interesting, Dave, defensively, because for those who didn't know, and I don't know that we highlighted this, I think our buddy Mark Caboli had written about it in the Trib. There were 40 players in the NFL who had played all of the team snaps coming into this week, 40. 38 were offensive linemen. I think there was one quarterback, and I'm drawing a blank, and the only defensive player was Lawrence Timmons. And Lawrence Timmons was off the field for 10 or so plays as the Steelers did something different in this game. So that's something worth noting. I think Timmons played every play last year or 2 years ago. He doesn't come off the field, and he came off the field in this one. So I'm sure that's, you know, a Tyler Eifert type of thing that they're thinking about. The other thing is Golden. You know, we do know that Will Allen got banged up. You know, he went right into the stomach or groin area of Steve McClendon at full speed as A.J. McCarron ducked under the sack, took the sack, but ducked under the play. That was a really nasty hit. And Golden played 21 snaps. And again, I'll keep saying it, I think the guy's been good when he's been out there. He has surprised me with what he's done this year. I like him on the field, and certainly have a much greater level of confidence that he's a guy who might help you next year at that position.
And then you see a play like late in the game where they got the touchdown where McCarron looks him off.
I mean, I don't know what was going there because Sean Spence is lined up over top of him and then drops into the flat. Vince Williams and Golden are late getting over there, and I got to assume Vince Williams, you know, maybe they both get looked off. But if Spence is dropping into the flat, which I assume it was his responsibility because he literally just left Burkhead and – and, you know, I did tweet, I don't know what the heck the coverage was on that play, but it obviously was either a great job of looking off or blown coverage because you can't leave the seam open freaking 5 yards from the end zone. We talk about it all the time. You got Golden's playing, you know, 5 yards deep in the end zone. He's never going to react to a guy up the seam if the guy's running a vertical.
Kind of reminiscent, sort of, what is a
Dallas
route,
game.
I think. Right, Dallas game with that Witten touchdown. I'm not sure that was the same route. I had to go back. If it is, props to them for going back that far and seeing what to run against. I think it was cover three back in the back end. We'll get about. And look, here we are. We're throwing stones at the glass house, and we don't have the cover. We know better than to do that without the all 22. And we should have that later on today, so maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that play on Wednesday there. But, I mean, Golden's given him some good snaps. Now, do I think he's – I mean, honestly, do you think he's the future at the position?
Well,
I mean, he can't beat Will Allen on the field right now.
Well,
either that or Will Allen's got some pictures of Tomlin.
Well, I think there's some of that, the veteran experience of Will Allen. Look, we got two guys back there that three weeks ago – I know I said out just, you know, said, look, I would make the change on both these guys. So I still think that Boykin and Robert Golden on the field would probably be a better combination. So I'm not changing from that point of view. So take from what
and
you
Will
thought.
Will Allen missed, I think, a few more tackles. Mike Mitchell missed some tackles yesterday. We'll have to go back through it and see who else. You just kind of, you know, like that Eifert catch and run early in the game. And then what was the other one? They converted a third and what was it? Was that the play that they converted on third and what was it? Do you remember the distance and thinking, my goodness, how the heck did they convert that? I'm trying to look for it in the description here. I know they converted a third and nine with an 18-yard play, third and 10 with a 24. Maybe that's the one in the first quarter there, the play to Eifert there. You're thinking, my goodness, just you know, getting down on the ground. You just hate to see these guys get all that yardage after, you know, that hidden yardage after contact or after first contact there. So they need to tighten up. You know, I don't. This is a defense still that's still scary.
Oh, it's scary in a negative way. Steelers defense for
right.
sure. For sure.
Right. Right. I mean,
look, you know,
just seems like some off. I mean, it seems like at certain points in the game, just offenses just move the ball effortlessly down the field with using vertical based, you know, even running all verticals because they know that the Steelers pass rush just can't get home. And how many times during games this year, especially, you know, go back and look at the one against the Raiders. Thinking, my goodness, you know, just, you know, how many are they rushing? Four, five, six, and still not even, you know, being able to get necessary pressure. So, you know, unless that changes and quarterbacks have time, if the Steelers roll out, you know, cover three type situations like that, or even cover two, as we've seen, they're going to get beat vertically.
So the takeaway from the game isn't all that positive. I mean, the O-line got a little bit dominated in the second half, first time we've seen that. And the D still is a question mark. I mean, they won the game. Let's not lose the big picture. That's the most important thing. But the other thing is, and I said this about the Bengals a bunch of times, I think they're a really good football team, and they've played one poor game all season long. And if you want to say a second one, it was their win over the Steelers. And if you want to say a third one, it was, you know, this one. The game against Houston that they lost 10-6, the only bad game they played. So the reality is the Steelers have forced the Bengals to not play good football games. So there's a lot to be said for that. And there's a lot to be said for making plays on defense. Three interceptions, I mean, all three really good interceptions. I mean, Tuitts, we talked about Gay. He read it, and he got help with pressure on the quarterback, which was key. Steelers didn't get as much pressure in the second half of this one, knowing the Bengals were going to throw. So that, you know, talk about that. And then Golden with a good hands catch and a great return by those guys. So, you know, when I said give it to the defense, they did what they needed to do, and the Steelers come out of this relatively healthy. And now they have a game where you feel like, boy, if they can win this game against Denver, I mean, you hate to just put yourself in the playoffs when you still have divisional games to play on the road, which would make the season for both the Browns and the Ravens. But you've got to feel good about your chances. Johnny actually played well again yesterday. So maybe, you know, maybe Baltimore has a puncher's chance. It's hard to think if it's Schaub or if it's Jimmy Clausen that the Ravens are going to be much of a threat. But, you know, you still got to go to Baltimore and win. And if they're going to get up for a game, that's the game they're going to get up for, particularly if they haven't, either of these teams have a chance to knock the Steelers out of the playoffs. So, but I do like where they are, Dave. And we were talking about on Twitter yesterday whether any of these late results would impact the Steelers. And the one that does impact the Steelers is the Raiders getting that win does now at least bring the Kansas City-Denver division into play, because if the Steelers take care of the Broncos this week, and that's obviously incredibly important for the Steelers, then the Broncos have to play the Bengals on the road. I think it's on the road. I'll double check that. But those two have to play, and if they lose both those games, then Kansas City's got the tiebreaker advantage if they win out, and their schedules look pretty good. Now, they didn't look good yesterday. San Diego could have timed that late, but a real opportunity here now for the Steelers to maybe be the 5 seed even, assuming they do what they got to do.
First, was that a disappointing win yesterday?
There are no disappointing wins against teams that are 10-2, so I wouldn't say it's a disappointing win.
Okay, I would agree, but there were points where I was disappointed during the game.
For sure,
I thought our narrative was instantly going to be, you know, Steelers win 33-3 because Dalton leaves early.
Yeah.
And yes, the late score made the game closer than what it was. And look, AJ McCarron's late interception. They have to go vertical in those situations. I mean, we talk all the time about sacks and interceptions and when they're getting them and what down distances they're getting them at, right? And you know, that last one and I think a sack or two kind of happen in those situations when you have teams down and you know exactly what they're going to have to do, you know, on the play. But no, not a disappointing loss, but one that I just felt that it should have been a lot more comfortable. But moving forward from here, yeah, I mean, Cincinnati, they played a 49ers. But, I mean, how much of a give me now is that game, which I believe is on the road out in San Francisco, okay?
Yeah, they went from a 7-point favorite to a 4-point favorite with the injury. So it's not a gimme, but, you know, if you're going to pick teams to play, you know, it's not a bad one to be playing.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about Denver already. what are we going to be talking about if Brock Osweiler goes 5-for-10 on deep balls against the Steelers?
Next week, oh my goodness. Well, we're going to talk about how they're going to have to score 40 points every game the rest of the way to not get knocked out of the playoffs.
But don't we already know that?
Yeah, no, I think we do. I mean, it's still the turnovers is the key for that defense. It's pretty straightforward. If they get two or three turnovers and get pressure on the quarterback, they can hold teams to 20 or less. And if they don't, they're probably going to give up 30 or more. So it's how does the opposing quarterback play? And they get it. You know, it's going to be another interesting test. They should be able to mix it up and make it hard for Brock Osweiler in Pittsburgh. I mean, this is actually a really interesting one, Dave, now that you bring it up, because this is a guy who's now played 4 or 5 games. So he's got some NFL experience. He's not a high pedigree guy. He's not, you know, he's not even Derek Carr level guy at this point in his career. And it's not that dynamic of an offense without a great run game. So Steelers take.
He's a tall Alex Smith.
Yeah, I mean
a real tall Alex Smith, 6'7", right? I mean, really? Yeah, go look at his game. I mean, is this who we're dealing with here?
I mean, yeah, I don't know if his interception ratio is as good as Alex Smith, but yeah, he's gonna, you know, he's not a dynamic guy without much of a running game. So you would think, look, the Raiders just crushed him, and Khalil Mack had one of the halves of all time with 5 sacks in that second half and forced a safety. You would think that this Bronco team would be have difficulty putting up 21 points in this game on Sunday.
I don't think they're going to have that. That's probably right. Don't top Keith Butler's 16 or 17, I have a feeling.
And then it's, you know, just, the Steelers against that Bronco defense. That's not going to be, you know, piece of cake either.
No, it's not. The funny thing is, you know, the Cincinnati game against really the 49ers next week, as long as the Steelers don't lose, that Cincinnati 49ers game doesn't mean anything to the Steelers, right? Because it's an out-of-conference game.
Cincinnati 49ers. Yeah, no. It doesn't.
In order for the Steelers to win the division, they have to – they you know, what
Bengals
what
have to lose
happen?
Out, right, and finish 10-6. And the Steelers have to win it clean. Steelers have to win out and go 11-5. The Bengals have to lose out and go 10-6.
No. I think there's some tiebreakers that go in the Steelers' favor if they because they're only 2 games behind the Bengals now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens if these two teams finish tied?
Well,
it goes division record, right? So
the Steelers would have went out and finished 4-2. And we were assuming the Bengals have another – so the Bengals have to lose to the Raiders.
To Baltimore.
The last game
right.
of the season.
Right. And they also have to lose to Denver.
Right. They got to lose 2 games, and one of them has to be to Baltimore.
Right.
And then that just pushes it to the next tiebreaker.
Which they'd have to lose to Denver, too, because of conference records, right?
Yeah, and then what happens to conference record? Are they tied?
Well, let's see. Right now, they're Cincinnati's 8-2, right?
Yep. So they'd be 8-4.
All right. And the Steelers are 5-4 right now.
So they'd be 8-4.
All right. Where do we go now?
Is it common opponents?
Oh Lord, we're getting in deep without doing research here. This is.
Go ahead. I'll play with this for a second here on the simulator, which I've become not perfectly adept at, but I've got some skills now on the simulator.
Yeah, it always gets me this time of year. I always think that you know I've got this thing down pat, and there's one scenario that I left. Okay, to break a tie within division, head to head. Okay, which obviously they would split. Best one lost in the division, they would obviously be tied there. Best one lost. Okay, common games goes before conference.
Okay.
So that's what we would have to figure out there. So it's common games within a division before best.
Common games within the conference, common games.
Just common games in general.
Okay, so we know that the divisional games are the same. That's out. They played both teams played the AFC West, NFC West. So Steelers went 3-1.
Right.
They beat Seattle. We're assuming they beat San Francisco. They lost to Arizona.
No, you need them to lose to two games.
Right. They lost. We're assuming they lose to Denver and Baltimore because they got to lose to Baltimore. Because that'll come first, the conference record first. So that'll push it both 3-1 in those games, and then so it's did they play a different schedule in interconference? Steelers, they didn't play Oakland. We played different schedules. I think that one's going to be the same as well.
They did. They opened the season at Oakland.
Okay.
And they beat Oakland.
Okay, so Steelers beat Oakland.
And they beat the Chargers. They beat Kansas City. The Steelers did.
Well, there you go. That's the game.
They beat the Seahawks. The Steelers did.
Yeah, there you go. That's the Steelers beat Arizona though, and they didn't.
Right, but what was their other loss then? So in other words,
they lost
would
to
have
the Texans. The Steelers didn't play the Texans.
Right.
And that's where the Steelers played the Colts and got a win. So that's the Steelers going to lose that. On the Kansas City game.
So the four. So in other words, what you're telling me is if they beat the 49ers, the Steelers have to, in other words, the Steelers have to run the table in order to get the division.
And the Bengals have to lose out. They're going to win it clean, 11-5 versus 10-6.
Are we sure about that? Are we sure that they can't just lose two to Denver and Baltimore, and the Steelers win out and they get it somehow that way?
I'm going to play with it, but I'm pretty sure.
Because they're two games behind in a loss conference right now. I think it's obvious that they have to lose to Baltimore and Denver. Here, I don't know. We'll research this. I'm sure we'll have several of the listeners write in on this as well, too. So you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah. I'm going to simulate this in one more time for us. Go ahead. So
now we do know that if they win out and the Jets win out, that the Steelers get in over the Jets, even though they're behind them right now as a number. You know, the Jets are the number six seed. The Steelers are number seven seed. Well, we know for a fact, though, that if they win out, the Steelers still control their own destiny as far as that goes.
And I will tell you that, the Broncos game's in Denver on Monday night next week, 2 weeks from now, after the Steelers play them. So Cincinnati goes to Denver. But I'll tell you that according to the New York Times simulation, if the Chiefs and the Steelers and the Jets win out, then the Steelers look like – here's what the thing that I have found interesting in doing the simulation is – the Steelers make the playoffs, but it's also, if the Chiefs win out, it has the Steelers a 58% chance of being the wild card team, because, you know, it means the Broncos have to win against Cincinnati and against San Diego because the Chiefs hold that tiebreaker. So the Steelers have a 58% chance of being the number five, the number one wild card team, the number five team overall. So, you know, if the Steelers get this win, all of a sudden, maybe they're looking at playing the AFC South team. Their odds would be higher that they play the AFC South team, or they get a 9% chance of being the number three seed hosting the wild card. Hey, here's one for you. Would you rather play the AFC South team on the road or host the other wild card team at home?
And the other wild card team
could be Denver.
Right, I don't want that. I want to play. I want to play
the AFC South.
Yeah, give me the Texans or the Colts.
That's the highest probability scenario right now if the Steelers win out.
And then what's your gift after that? Assuming you beat the let's face it, the Colts should have Andrew Luck back by the playoffs.
Well, the good thing is then your gift is probably Cincinnati or Kansas City, because New England's going to be the one seed, and if you're the three. Oh, no, then you get new. Well, no, then who knows? That depends on how the other games break.
Oh, we're over here counting chickens, aren't we?
I'm doing some good work over here. Well,
you're doing a lot of math.
I'm actually just pressing buttons. Something else is doing that.
Look, I think it was the ESPN simulator last year was actually wrong. I was relying on that to do. There was some weird time record that they didn't have calculated right.
So I just to give us one other piece of clarity here. If the Steelers and who do the Bengals have next week? If the Steelers win out and the Bengals lose their last two but beat the 49ers, the Steelers are the five seed.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Somebody's going to send you an email and tell you wrong.
I got a 99% are here. Sorry, all the Bengals have to do is – oh, no, now I'm wrong. Let me take that back. If the Steelers win out and the Bengals lose to the Broncos and to the Ravens, the Steelers win. So somehow that tiebreaker breaks the Steelers' way.
All right, that's, you know, just beat the Broncos next is what you're kind of saying there. Look, Oakland's done, right? I mean, they're not I don't think they're officially eliminated, but they're not going to get in here. Jacksonville's not going to get in here. Buffalo, they're, you know, look, the best they can do is 9-7 now, right? So they're going to need a whole heck of a several of these teams are going to be eliminated next week, you would think, right?
Yeah, we'll be down to seven teams, I'm pretty sure.
So, I mean, we're talking about the Jets, the Chiefs, and the Steelers right now.
And the Broncos.
all vying for wild cards, because New England's clinched. You'd have to think, you have to like Cincinnati's chances of clinching at least a. Isn't it hard to believe they've yet to even clinch a playoff spot right now?
Yeah.
At 10-3, and the same goes for Denver right now as well too. But all that's subject to change. Best team in the NFL right now is
Arizona. I mean, look, it's hard to not say Carolina. I didn't get to see a minute of that game yesterday. The Falcons obviously are done. It depends, I guess, if you believe in Ted Ginn and Greg Olsen, because Cam's playing great right now. But those two teams on a neutral field, I think I'd take Arizona, but probably give it a toss up.
That would be a great NFC Championship game, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be a fun one to watch.
Seattle's playing great football as well too. I don't think you can discount them. I don't think you can get rid of them just yet as well too. So I think there's three teams that could come, and then Green Bay, but I'm not sure Green Bay's equipped defensively. And at the wide receiver position properly, to make enough noise. Now that I've said that, they'll be in the Super Bowl. But I think it's obvious that it's Seattle, Carolina, Arizona on that side. And the AFC is just really wide open. But I disagreed with your statement yesterday that you have to consider the Steelers a favorite to win the AFC at this point.
Yeah, I'd put them number two behind New England. I really would. And then I might actually put the Jets a small smidgen ahead of ahead of Kansas City and Denver right there, just because quarterback play. It's hard to Denver just lost at home to Oakland, so I don't give me the Steelers.
No way Cincinnati wins it all right now, right?
No, I don't think so. But when we're singing AJ McCarron's praises 3 weeks from now when they ran the table, let me have a redo.
We'll see. What else we got? Injuries. Mike Mitchell suffered. What did Thomas say? A shoulder injury on that.
Played AJ Green.
Bud Dupree left the game early with I think they called it a tailbone injury, but Mike Tomlin called it a lower back injury. He doesn't think either of those guys. He think part that might limit them early on in participation early next week in practice. Just bumps and bruises outside of that. I think they were fortunate as far as that goes. Alejandro Villanueva left that game briefly with a quote-unquote illness, and there'll probably be a little bit of talk about that. I know Alex wrote about that. Was it an illness, or was he being checked for a concussion, or what? Was he just dizzy? Who knows? But I think they got out of that game, relatively healthy and are in good shape for the Denver game coming up. Mike Tomlin's comments about what happened pregame were interesting. Post game, there's a lot of chatter that you hit on early on this thing as well too. We'll save a little bit of this. I'm sure we're going to have a lot more, quite a few sound bites to discuss on Wednesday, stemming from the Bengals game as well too. That'll of course be after the Mike Tomlin press conference that takes place on Tuesday. Oh, let's see. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show, The Terrible Podcast, at gmail.com. If you'd like to donate, like so many of you have recently, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com. Upper right-hand corner is the donate button for PayPal. We need to give a shout-out to Jacob Madrid, who donated over the weekend. Ben Kartzman, who donated over the weekend. Thank you, guys. Victor Perry, our buddy Victor Perry, donated as well, too. Francisco Nera, I think we hit both those guys in the last podcast here. So that's all I got, David.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.